This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you from Simon Fraser University's Burnaby campus in British Columbia.
Airways. We're not able to take your call right now. Press 1 if your cabin temperature met or exceeded 30 degrees Celsius while you were stuck in your seat for over 4 hours while the plane idled. Press 2 if your full body cavity search didn't happen in private, but rather in front of your entire extended family. Press 3 if the only in-flight entertainment was Air Bud Part 6. Press 4 if you've been on hold for over 4 hours. Press 5 if you've been on hold for 5 hours. Press 6 if you've been on hold.
Flying is just hell. Honestly, it's gotten so bad. It's just bad news every week. Last week, there was the CrowdStrike tech failure. Porter grounded its entire fleet. All the other airlines had major delays. Just weeks before that, WestJet had a strike. That up a lot of people's summer vacation plans. Not long before that, Flair went under. The budget carrier Flair. Too bad for you if you booked your summer travel with them. Not an isolated incident. Flair went the way of Lynx, Jets Go, Swoop. And it's not just the little budget carriers either. We used to have major airlines in Canada that competed with Air Canada and WestJet. Ward Air, people remember that one fondly. Pacific Western Airlines, Canadian Airlines. There were tons of smaller carriers that couldn't make a go of it. Many of them named after animals. Beaver Air, Big Salmon Air, Air Caribou, Cougar Air, Lamb Air, all gone. There were over 500 airlines in the short history of aviation in Canada that went under, that tried and failed to make a go of it. Maybe that tells you something. Maybe this is just too difficult a country to actually have a competitive marketplace for airlines. Maybe it's just the geography of Canada relative to the population size, and that is why we've ended up with a duopoly, with only two national airlines. And who can act surprised that we're not getting the greatest customer service given that situation? Maybe we just have to eat what we're served here, but maybe we don't. And just hear me out here. Maybe it has something to do with how polite and weak the Canadian consumer can be, what pushovers we are, how accepting we are of absolutely terrible treatment from our airlines. What if we actually knew how to stand up for ourselves? What if we knew the rules? What if we knew the tools? What if we had strategies and words that we could use when we fly that could actually get us what we want, get us our luggage back, get us our money back, get us on that flight that we're told was canceled, but we know it was just canceled because they didn't sell enough seats. So too bad for you. The guy who's going to give you all those tools is Dr. Gábor Lukács. And he is an interesting guy. He was a child math prodigy, kind of like a Goodwill Hunting type, who has just made it his business to stand up for the little guy, to stand up for the Canadian airline passenger. And he's going to do that today on this show. He's going to tell you how to do it. And by the time we're done, you are going to have a number of tactics and tools and words, specific things you can say that's going to turn things around for you and empower you the next time you are screwed over by a Canadian airline. So wait for it.
Thank you for calling Canadaland Airways. It's unlikely we'll be right with you as soon as we can.
Hi, Gábor.
Hi, Jesse.
You empower people to fight the airlines, yes?
Aspire to do so. Certainly, there's lots of lack of information and misinformation out there that we are trying to correct. Passengers who are well-informed and aware of their rights are empowered passengers. So our vision is to empower passengers with knowledge, with courage, and with a vision of going ahead and enforcing their rights and standing their ground when they're facing very powerful corporations like airlines.
In your experience, you've taken like something like close to 30 cases through, and you've You've had success with all but three or four of them, right?
I secured about 26 rulings by the Canadian Transportation Agency against airlines.
And you also have racked up some wins where you've actually gotten the level of consideration they owe passengers to be increased. Like you've done, like you've kind of taken the role that the regulator is supposed to as sort of a one-man band.
Yeah. What you said, it just describes in one sentence most accurately what I've done. And what I tell people is that my real aspiration is to make myself obsolete. I would like to see a regulator that does all the things that I've been doing and I'm doing now. I'm not a lawyer, so I cannot represent people in most courts. I've, of course, have been helping passengers to with the individual cases and putting out information that enables passengers to win their cases. That's another angle. Because ultimately, let's just come back to the point that I was making earlier. Ultimately, if we don't like what the airlines are doing to us, we need to look ourselves in the mirror. If we don't hold airlines accountable directly in small claims court, if we don't hold airlines accountable indirectly through the government, through pressing our members of parliament, that this something needs to change, then we are responsible for what is happening.
Everybody has a horror story about what happened to them and how their rights were trampled upon and how powerless they were and how they got screwed over. I was traveling with my wife and we were traveling with another couple, okay? And we took one of these budget flights, domestic flights within Europe, right? Like, you know, these like budget airlines where they rope you in when you're saying, okay, how, like, if I'm going to go from this part of Spain to that part of Spain, oh, it's only 30 euros? That's incredible. That's so cheap. And these friends of ours we were flying with, I'm going to call this guy Nathan because that's his name. We're smarter than the airline. We bought the extra upsell to bring on a carry-on bag. So we thought we had it all sorted out, and we're only going to pay 80 euros, 30 euros for the flight, 50 for the carry-on bag. And here we are, we're rolling our suitcases onto the plane, and the flight attendant stops Nathan and says, excuse me, sir, I think your carry-on bag is too large. You're going to have to check it. And he says, no, I don't have to check it. I bought the extra, I paid to bring this on with me. She goes, doesn't matter if you paid, it's too big. And she points to this like metal contraption that he's got to go and fit it into. Now he knows that it'll fit in the overhead. He's taken this with him on many flights. But now she's got him in this high pressure situation because there's like a log jam. Everybody's coming on, like he's holding up the line. He's trying to jam his suitcase into this metal contraption. And it's a nice piece of luggage and he's scraping it and scratching it and everyone's looking at him. He's got to open it up in front of everybody. He's taking things out so that he can squish it further. It's very embarrassing. His wife's underwear is coming out of the suitcase. He's putting that into her purse. He's trying to make it work. And finally, he like steps on it, and just the little wheel is poking up. And she goes, doesn't fit. And he's like blue in the face, angry at her. He goes, fine. What do I have to pay to check this? And she says, you got to pay 120 euros to check it. He goes, why? Okay, fine. But I only owe you 70 because I already paid you 50. To take this suitcase on the flight. She goes, sorry, sir. It's 120 more in addition to the 50. It's not our fault. It's not our fault that you didn't know that your bag. And meanwhile, there are people with huge suitcases rolling past behind him onto the flight. It's totally arbitrary.
This looks, it on its face, it looks unfair. It looks a bit as a bait and switch. But from a contractual perspective, if you have actually read the contract as a passenger, if you actually read all the fine print, then you would have known.
He's screwed, right? This is their game. They know this game better than him. Like, he's going to fight some Spanish airline for his 70 euros back, like, or his 120 euros, like, or the 50. Like, that's not going to happen, right?
As much as I sympathize with your friend Nathan, I don't think that the airline broke the law here.
Uh-huh.
That's part of the problem. So when you're dealing with consumer law issues, largely speaking, you can divide the problems into two big buckets. One bucket is, the airline is doing something which is outright against the law. You would be surprised by how many things fall into that bucket.
Give me an example.
Trying to tell passengers that when their baggage is delayed, they can only spend $50 per day on items that they buy until they get their baggage.
Like they're gonna reimburse you for the inconvenience of having all your medication and your stuff.
Actually, how much you can spend. So some airlines will tell you can spend only amount X per day for buying items that you're missing because your baggage has been delayed. And the answer is no, they cannot do that. They simply cannot do that. The law is that they are liable up to approximately 2,300 Canadian dollars for your baggage delay. And if it means that on the first day you have to buy or rent a suit because you're going to a wedding, then let it be. It's perfectly normal. It doesn't mean that you can go on a shopping spree, but you still get to replace whatever you need.
You may have to prove that your tuxedo was in the bag and you had to go buy a new one, but $2,300 is the number.
Yeah. This is a typical example. Another is, which is Wedget is doing a lot, is telling people that we're not going to give you a hotel or we cannot give you a hotel when your flight is delayed, but you can spend only up to $150 per night for a hotel. We'll only reimburse up to that amount. It's not true. Wedget has to pay for whatever it costs the hotel if they are liable for it under the law, and they cannot set monetary limits. So these are kind of examples where, another example, that's how my career as a passenger rights advocate started. When Air Canada, back in 2008, used to have those big signs at their baggage offices saying, we're not responsible for zippers, wheels, handles, and so on. So if it gets damaged, we don't take even your report. That was roughly the practice. And it was completely illegal against the Montreal Convention, which is an international treaty that governs passengers' rights, and it has a force of law in Canada.
Wait. The international treaty that they were beholden to was called the Montreal
Convention.
The convention was established in Montreal, but Canadian airlines were violating it.
That's right. So it is not just a convention, not just a kind of guide or friendly agreement. It has the force of law like any other. It's like the Income Tax Act, same legal status in Canada. It's legally binding.
It's the law. And they were explicitly not following it and setting caps that they were not allowed to set. And that's what got you into this.
What the airlines were saying is that they are refusing to take liability for common damages to baggage. And the law was clear that they had to pay for it. And still, they were just poking the public in the eye. That's the one type of misconduct or mistreatment of passengers where the law is clear, yet the airline is refusing to comply with the law. But there's a second type of injustice, which is what Nathan experienced, where there's no clear law which they are violating. It's not that they are violating a law. It's more that they are just taking advantage of the law not being there and not protecting you as a passenger. And that is happening too. The reason I'm finding it important to distinguish between the two, because the second type of injustice, one would hope, can be cured by advocacy and introducing new laws. But a first type of injustice, when the airlines are just blatantly disregarding what the law says, that's something far harder to cure, because it is part of a culture where just airlines think that laws are mere recommendations, and if it's not convenient for us, we don't follow it.
Yeah, and then only actually being, you know, if somebody happens to know that they're being violated and complain, then okay, we'll pay off this one person, but we'll go back to our standard practice of screwing everybody else. And we're supposed to have a consumer rights official body that actually enforces this stuff. I have another case study for you, and you tell me which category this one belongs in, okay?
Sure.
This is currently a situation that our editor-in-chief, Karen, is facing. She booked a ticket through WestJet to go to a journalism conference in Oklahoma. I think it's like end of July, you know, but she booked this a while ago. And then, change of plans, her son is having a birthday party in Ottawa. She wants to change her plans. She's not going to fly back from Oklahoma to Toronto. She's going to fly from Oklahoma to Ottawa to go to his birthday party. So now she's got to call up WestJet and say, hey, I'm happy to pay the cancellation fee on the round trip, but I only want to go one way to Oklahoma. And, you know, she's expecting a headache. Maybe they'll say, well, you can't just cancel one way. You got to cancel the whole thing and then rebook a one-way ticket. And she's prepared to eat, you know, because the one way is probably more expensive than 50% of the round trip. I don't know. She's prepared to eat some extra costs for this. But she knew this information a long time ago, but she couldn't make the change because WestJet went on strike, right? And she's like calling up WestJet and they're like, you know, go to our website. So you can't get through to anybody. The website doesn't let you cancel just one leg of the trip. So she gets in a situation where she can finally make the change now, but the only way she can make it is to cancel the whole round-trip flight to Oklahoma and back and then rebook a one-way. And so much time has passed that the rates have gone up that it's actually cheaper to do the round-trip. But that's not her fault. That's because they went on strike.
There are two sides to a contractual obligation. On the one hand, WestJet promises to allow her to make the change in exchange for a change fee and some, you know, extra expenses. But WestJet also has to be available to perform the change. Mm-hmm. So if WestJet, say, shuts down its call center, extreme case, and says, no, we are not reachable, then Wedget is in breach of contract. So what I would do in this case is I would sue after the flight is over Wedget for breach of contract for failing to actually provide her with a meaningful way to exercise her right to cancel part of the flight or whatever she wanted to do. I would not let them get away with it.
This is a how-to conversation. We want to give our listeners the tools here. So you're saying, yeah, she's got a case. It's a, essentially they breached a contract and laws exist, contract law exists, and we have courts to help adjudicate it. But we're talking about like a few hundred dollars here. You know, I don't know, like $500 or $600 maybe at the top end of things. What's her next step here? She's going to sue them in small claims court? I know that it costs something to sue somebody. What's the cost to file a small claims complaint?
Depends on which province you are. But the point is that if you win the case, then the airline will have to repay you all your filing fee, your service fee, all this kind of expense you incur. They have to repay you. For your time, it may vary from province to province. You may or may not be able to get some costs for time you spend. That's iffy. But in terms of the steps, and I would say first, gather your evidence. Make sure you have all the files, all the documents. Next thing is create a chronology, like a timeline of what happened. What are the key events that happened? Then you go and do some legal research. What are legal sources of your rights? What type of case law may be on something similar as what happened to you? And then you send an airline a letter of demand. Tell them, this is what you did to me, very concisely, very much to the point. This is what you did. This is why it is a breach of contract. This is what I want you to do. So it's really almost like a three-part letter. I'm writing to you because I want you to do A, B, C. This is what you did to me, and this is why it's wrong. Then at the end, repeat the demand and tell them if you don't pay up within 30 days, I'm going to take to small claims court. And then on the 31st day, serve the airline with small claims court papers.
Is that letter of demand more effective if it's sent to them on a law firm's letterhead?
I would not necessarily agree with that. Surely if your uncle is a lawyer, can write a letter for you, sure, do it, why not? But I have not seen in many cases that drastically different outcome between a letter sent by lawyers and a letter sent by lay people. They both get often ignored. And the time when they actually start taking things seriously is once the airline is serving small claims court papers, then they reach out and maybe want to settle. Even then, mind you, airlines often try to insist that passengers agree to a confidentiality clause as part of the settlement. And we recommend very strongly to not agree to any kind of confidentiality because your freedom of speech is highly valuable. Your right to talk about what they need to do is valuable. If they want to pay for your silence, they have to pay more than just your claim.
I think the most egregious thing that people commonly experience, there's probably a few cases, but the thing that I think makes people feel really angry and powerless are things like they cancel your flight because they couldn't sell enough seats. And then you were hoping to come home or you can't leave when you were supposed to leave or you missed the conference, you missed the wedding. And then your life is overturned and you're completely at their mercy.
But you're not.
You feel that way, and they're giving you a voucher for a hotel that you don't want to stay at, and maybe they're giving you some like fast food voucher, maybe they're giving you money that doesn't quite cover your expenses, and basically feeling like you're just in limbo in a strange place or not able to get to the place where you need to go. That's where people's lives get most, I think, hijacked by airlines is in that kind of scenario. That, and I think when you're sitting on the tarmac for like 10 hours, those to me strike me as the most, what do you think? You know more about this than me.
Sitting on a tarmac for 10 hours is a whole separate issue. That's more like forcible confinement. And what I recommend a passenger in the past in such a situation is call the police, call 911 if that happens to them, because the airline has no right to keep you there on the tarmac for 10 hours. And if you don't have proper food, don't have proper beverages, water, maybe toilet access, ventilation, those can be serious health consequences.
Wait one second. Your advice is to pick up your phone and call 911 and say, I'm being forcibly confined by Air Canada. Has anyone ever done that?
If you're being kept there for over the limit allowed by the law, that's what I recommend passengers. Some people may have done it. I don't know. It happened several years ago when there was the number of flights diverted to the Ottawa airport, and some people were kept on the very, very hot planes for us. 5, 6, 7 hours, I forget exactly how many, and they did call 911 and there were emergencies, people fell sick. And you don't wait until somebody falls sick. You call help before that. Unfortunately, some police officers don't quite understand that this is a form of forcible confinement. airline has no right to keep you in a plane if the plane is not actually traveling, going somewhere, just because it's not convenient for them or they're not sufficiently sophisticated to bring fresh air, to bring food, to bring water to you. That's not your problem. You are a free Canadian, and an airline has no right to keep you in that piece of metal.
All right, so let me get this down as sort of like a list of what to do, because they can't keep me there over like 4 hours, something around that, unless there's like a fire outside or customs says don't let anyone, unless they've got some reason. So I won't just pick up my phone and call the cops. I'll go to the flight attendant and I'll say, excuse me, what is the reason why we're here? Maybe even record them saying that.
I like that.
Yeah, so I've got a document of it. I say, so you're telling me this is not because of any kind of like safety situation, customs hasn't demanded this, it's not for any of those reasons? Try to get the confirmation and say, okay, my understanding then is that you are in violation of the law. Which law?
It would be Section 9 of the Air Passenger Protection Regulations.
You are in violation of Section 9 of the Air Passenger Protection Regulations, my good man. And I will be contacting the authorities. Maybe I should give them like a last chance. You know, like, oh, this guy knows this stuff. I will be contacting the police to let them know that you are violating my rights, sir, in 10 minutes' time. And then I give them a chance to fix it.
Yes, yeah, I would start already asking questions after 3 hours, because 3 hours is the core obligation. Just the law provides them a 45-minute additional window. But after 3 hours, I would start asking questions. And I would not tell the police simply that, you know, violation of APPR, because police won't care about APPR. But being forcibly confined to an aircraft against your will and not being respected in your right to leave and disembark, that's a different issue.
I'm going to be like Spartacus for my fellow passengers. I'll start running this list at the 3 hour mark. You've got 45 minutes to make this right and start getting their answers on the record under threat of calling up the cops and complaining that I'm being forcibly confined by a major national airline.
And obviously be very respectful with the crew members. It's not their fault in most cases that it's happening. So I'm not suggesting that you make a scene on the flight, but if necessary, don't hesitate to call help, because it's your freedom. You didn't sign away your liberty by buying an airline ticket. And I know it sounds very dramatic, but don't be a pushover, for heaven's sake. The airline is there to provide you with a service. You're not there to serve the airline.
But that's good advice. That's the advice I had for Nathan. Why are you yelling at this woman? It's her job to tax you for your suitcase. That's their business model. You know these terms when you start to try to get your cheap airfare, right? I got a friend who's a flight attendant. I don't want to hear her, you know, an earful from her, because I'm sure she gets abuse on a daily level.
It's also unfortunate that lately is an increasing number of flight attendants also getting battered from passengers.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't deserve it. These people are doing hard jobs, and being able to deal with humans, whether you are dealing with it in a courtroom or in a classroom or an airplane, it's a very, very hard job. It's not the giving out the drinks and the food which is hard. It's being able to be flawlessly nice to most people. And most flight attendants are flawlessly nice.
No, it's crazy emotional labor. And then after some conflict or, you know, situation like that, you're like stuck in a plane with them sometimes for hours. Okay, let's get back to our actual tool set here, because you've given some tips on what to do with that one, you know, unfortunately common situation of being left on the tarmac for too long. What about where you're just like stuck in Denver for 3 days longer than you were supposed to be there?
I mean, I would say don't get stuck there for 3 days to begin with. It depends on what is the reason for the flight cancellation. But you mentioned the example where just airline undersell the flight, weren't able to sell a flight, so they're canceling a flight for purely commercial reasons. In such situations, the airline has to rebook you on a competitor's flight if they cannot rebook you on their own flight departing within 9 hours of the original departure time. So basically, I would give the airline some time, maybe an hour or two, to rebook me. If there's no contact, nothing is happening from the airline's side, I would just buy a ticket on a competitor airline, get home, and then make the original airline pay for the new ticket's price.
Now that assumes that, but that's based on the reason being a purely commercial reason. They never tell you why they've canceled your flight. They just say, we've canceled the flight.
That's true. But if they don't tell you, you have every right to assume that it was canceled for commercial reasons, because then they breach their obligation to give you the reason. More importantly, though, if they don't rebook you for several hours, then they are breach of the obligation to rebook regardless of the reason, because airlines have an obligation to rebook you even if it is due to a snowstorm or weather or act of terrorism. There are still rules governing their rebooking obligation in those situations. And so if they just ignore that obligation, like what we have seen happening recently under the WestJet strike, when passengers were just left fending for themselves, you just go and buy a ticket for yourself and make sure the airline is held liable for all your expenses, not just a ticket, but anything else that is caused, not by the cancellation itself, but by the airline's failure to respect the obligation to rebook you, which exists even if the original cancellation was entirely outside the carrier's control.
I love that solution because you're taking the power back and not saying, you've got to fix this for me. You're fixing it for yourself, and then you're gonna send them the bill. Do you just send them the bill, or are we then, like, what is the headache after the fact? Are you now sending them this letter of demand, you know, and then they're going to ignore the letter of demand, so now you got to sue them in small claims court?
First of all, you have to give the airline a chance to do the right thing at the beginning. So you cannot just buy a ticket yourself without giving some chance to the airline to rebook you. But not doesn't have to be a lengthy period, just a small chance. But then once you have the bill, you send the airline a copy of the bill with letter of demand. You know, you have, I was supposed to be on flight X. The flight was canceled. You failed to rebook me. You didn't offer me any alternate transportation. Therefore, I had no choice but buy the ticket for myself. And I incurred expense in the amount of XY. Requested you refund me or reimburse me for these expenses within 30 days. Failure to do so will result in legal actions being taken against the airlines, sincerely yours. And then come the 31st and still no response, no money in your account, serve them with small claims court papers.
What do you think is the number one thing, the number one right people have, a recourse they have that they don't know that they had, and that would actually empower them, like, in just like regular life, business travel, you know, family vacation travel kind of situations?
I would say it's about the right to be rebooked when your flight is canceled, including on competitor airlines, depending on what the cause for the cancellation is. But you do have a right to be rebooked. And that may be, if you ever happen to see that your flight is canceled, just start looking up provisions of the Air Passenger Protection Regulation, Section 17, Sub 1, and 18 sub 1. And
no one's doing that. No one's doing it. Give me a hack. Give me the magic words. I've been rebooked. I think it's unfair. I go to the counter and I say to them at the counter, I have a right to be rebooked. Is there some hack or magic words you can give me?
No, I don't think so. Just there's no magic sauce here. There's no magic wand here. What you need to do is to basically tell the airline what the law says. Maybe even show up with a copy of the legislation on your phone or something. You know, Madam Sir, the Air Passenger Protection Regulation says so and so. I'm going to read it to you. And so are you going to be willing to comply with the law and rebook me, or will I have to buy a flight to myself and then make the company pay later? I would also important not to accept a refund of a ticket, because airlines, what WestJet has been doing is they have been trying to force a refund on passengers. And then the passenger loses the right to rebook if they accept the refund. Because, like, okay, I'm walking away from.
Let's actually slow down for a minute right there, because I feel like that's a crucial bit of advice. Because when you're in a conflict with them, the moment that they offer you a concession like that, okay, here's your refund, my guess is that most people just grab it, but not even knowing that they're actually sacrificing their own rights in that moment. So what is the circumstance where they're most likely to be offering you this refund that actually puts you at a disadvantage?
So suppose that your flight has been significantly delayed or canceled, and you go up to the airline and tell them, I want you to rebook me on a different flight, maybe on a competitor airline. They say, sorry, we cannot do it, but we are happy to give you a refund. Or we can only rebook you in 1 week from now, but we can offer you a refund. And the answer is no, you actually have to rebook me on a competitor airline, if that's really what they have to do in the circumstances. And I'm not accepting a refund. So don't give me a refund. I will not accept it. I demand that you actually fulfill your contractual obligations.
That is so good. That's because the fact is the refund might be based on the price that they were offering 3 months ago. And now I got to get my ass home on a, like, the next available flight, which could cost twice as much. And I've got to eat the difference. And as soon as I accept the refund, I lose my right to they have to rebook me unless I accept that refund.
Exactly. If they've involuntarily refund you, you can still tell a judge that, well, they were acting on their own. It was very clear that I wanted a rebooking. And then a judge would likely order the airline to pay you for the extra expenses you incur for arranging for your own transportation if the airline was in default of their obligations to rebook you under the law.
And so step two of this scenario is, if I say I'm not accepting your refund, you've got to rebook me, and I don't get satisfaction there, they're like, well, sorry, sir, we can't rebook you. I go ahead and rebook myself. I seek compensation later from them. That's a good one to know. Gabor, everybody around the world complains about airlines. Is Canada particularly bad, or is there something particularly Canadian about the way the problem plays out here?
Part of the problem is that one of the things that makes Canada so livable and hospitable to is that generally there is a lot of